Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian and writer Dame Baptiste, and my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka the Hizzer,
hello,
Ofe on the decks, and a very special mix of guests pose the questions that need to be asked. Where we are talking everything from pop culture to subculture to rape culture. I said it, Howard.
I know. You can say what you like, mate. You can say what you like. We're questioning everything. I mean, you can question that. It's fine to question rape culture.
It's not much of a question. It's bad.
Well, it's bad, but you can debate
what constitutes it.
So that's fine. No one can get upset about that.
That's what we call controversy on this podcast. That's a really weird segue to introduce my next guest, an amazing Scottish comedian and writer. She's performed on your screens on shows such as Live at the Apollo, Roast Battle, Live at the BBC, 8 out of 10 Cats, the Russell Howard Hour, and starred in Vice comedy series Brexit Stage Left. She's written for The Guardian as well as numerous Radio 4 shows, and we're all looking forward to seeing her new BBC show, Don't Ask Fern, where she offers anti-agony aunt advice. So, needless to say, it gives me great pleasure to introduce a longtime professional friend, Fern Baradi.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, Fern.
Mini clap.
Hi, Fern. Can we get an extra clap? Because Fern has made several gains. To those of you who are au fait with the jargon used on social media, Fern is cut and made gains.
I'm not banging weights. Not cut enough. Yeah, I want to do fasting.
That's all gym people say. They all say they're not cut enough.
Yeah.
Getting cut, well, because my body fat's 24% just now, so I've only just got in.
Even the fact that you even know stuff like that, this is why, like, I don't know, I'll be like, my gut's big.
Do you get in pain at the gym? I don't think I've ever got in pain at the gym when I went.
No, well, I've been trying to learn to do pull-ups because it takes women ages to just do one, and that hurts a bit. But I like it. It's more just trying to fight appetite because I really love food.
Right.
And like in the summer, I really lost weight for because I'd done Apollo, and then as soon as that finished, I went to Padella. There's a pasta place near here.
Oh yeah,
I went
there
and I got like two dinners for myself on my own, and I just ate like a bitch, man. It was amazing.
I like it. I like food. I love pasta. I love carbs. Fuck you, Dr. Atkins. What the fuck do you know anyway? Where is he nowadays?
Yeah, well,
remember him?
He died, but he didn't die of Atkins.
Are you sure? Did he die of his own diet?
Or did he, exactly?
He had a heart attack. I don't like eating meat, so it's hard to do that.
And you don't like it?
Nah. Right. I kind of cut back on it.
On meat?
Well, I didn't want to say I was becoming a vegetarian because it annoys me when other comedians tell everyone a lot.
Yeah. Mm.
So I just sort of stopped eating it like a couple of years ago, and I've had like a few slip at Australia, like being in Chinatown. Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah, it's very hard to avoid the
food. Slip ups then.
The thing is, you have to remember also your lifestyle doesn't really accommodate being able to eat at regular intervals and have like 3 square meals a day, and also not a lot of healthy places open when you finish gigging. And ladies and gentlemen, Fern is a headliner, so she'll be done.
I know, because I've started headlining stuff, and I always think, why am I headlining this?
Because you're good and you've earned it.
You're funny. I remember seeing you on something called Sean Walsh's...
That was good.
What was that? Sean Walsh's...
Comedy Spectacular.
His girlfriend was on that.
I remember his girlfriend was on that. She was, but she was good. That was a show at Disney Rascal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like Rebecca Humphries a lot. Got a lot of time for
her on the show.
Yeah, her and Joanna Chikonska, they did a show together because Joanna, her friend, was the keyboardist. And they played together. We all did it together. It was like the first TV thing we did. Do you remember?
It was.
In the caves. You know what? That was crazy because like that was the first time I'd done something. My friend was living on the Cherry Orchard Estate in Charlton, and I was not making a lot of money from comedy. And I think it was maybe like a year before I did my first show in Edinburgh. And I remember sitting there with him when it came out, and that's the first time I was seeing my Twitter go,
Yeah.
That's the first time I'd ever seen, like, you know, activity on my social media.
I remember that show well because it was one of the first times I ever saw you, Fern, and you were really, really good. And I also remember that particularly because, I'm sure he'll come on the podcast at some point, Dane, is John Kearns, who won the Best Newcomer that year.
Yeah.
Went with that. And I have to say, you know, I like obsessively love his comedy. Like, I've watched all his shows. Like,
he's lovely as well.
And he's an amazing bloke. But watching him on telly was such a different experience. And it made me think about how translating what you do from the clubs and the venues to the television is a complicated thing. And I remember thinking that you're going to not struggle.
Thanks. I remember clearly John's performance that night because he did this. The audience were all, they were all like people from my area just outside Edinburgh. Yeah. They kind of plebs, right?
Yeah.
And John did a really, they were heckling John and he did a really funny put down and then they just cut it out.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I was like, how can you cut out the best bit of the set?
It was a litmus test for all of us to work out how some of the magic works in TV. And some of it is just sleight of hand. Yeah, and some of it is basically just fucking an illusion. we always have a lot of love for John Kearns on this podcast as well.
John, we're going to have you on at some point.
We'll have him on.
But it's time for a question, because that's what this show's about. It's about questioning everything.
It is about questioning everything. And as our esteemed guest, who we're very grateful for coming down, Fern, we, of course, offer you the floor to the first question.
So, Dane, bearing in mind that I'm not smoking weed at the moment because I have to write a new show and I'm not drinking because I have to get cut, how do you cheer yourself up?
How do you cheer yourself up without alcohol and drugs?
Yeah.
It can be very tough, especially in comedy, because there's very little opportunity for, you know, the normal ways of, feeling happy as a social species because you don't get to socialise. Because I guess what most people do is that whenever they're going through their shit, it's like the weekend's coming up, I'll hang out with my friends and take my mind off it. We work the weekends. So you don't really have the same opportunities to socialise that most people have.
It's an interesting question because on one level, what you those things that you're talking about, so it's like, what's your drink of choice?
I'd like red wine.
Oh, it's like a glass of red wine.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, whatever weed you like to smoke.
So sophisticated. I feel terrible now.
Mm. What would your drink of choice be, Dane?
If of choice, I'd say maybe like a Hennessy and Coke.
Mm.
If of choice.
Lovely.
I would want to say like Remy Martin or something like that, or like a cognac on the rocks, but I'm not that sophisticated. I'm lying. I've got a sweet tooth.
But the idea that those drinks are your path to happiness is formed out of habit, right? It's just a habitual thing.
I very rarely drink anymore.
Right.
So not for any interesting reason. It's just like weight loss again. So unfashionable to say that now. Like, I wish I loved being fat and that I was... thought it was a great thing.
No, we had this discussion. You know yourself, and you know, there are some people that if they feel good about that, that's completely up to them.
Yeah, I do think that's fit. And I also think, like, I don't think fat people should be attacked or made to feel bad or anything.
I do not believe in fat shaming at all. And I think that any homogenized idea of the ideal form. And really, when we talk about fat, we're talking about, it's mainly women that are stigmatised for being fat.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't believe in that.
I just fat shame myself. But,
yeah, me like, too. And so greed shaming is what it is. I think greed shaming or gluttony shaming, that I don't take umbrage with. I feel like, so when, you know, terms like fat cats exist, and I think that's fine because obviously that refers to their excess. That's why these guys have gout and all these bulbous noses and shit, because they're having more than their fair share. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that kind of terminology. But yeah, stigmatising somebody for being fat and by that, you know, saying that they're going to be lazy or food obsessed is bullshit, you know. Mm. And isn't necessarily healthy, because obviously we know the other end of the spectrum of this body dysmorphia. If you're super skinny, you can also have health implications. But yeah, I'm like yourself. I kind of self-flagellate in the mirror and be like, look how fat you are, you fat piece of shit.
There was a fat picture of me on stage last week and I made it my screensaver. Someone took a picture of me on stage last week and I was really fat in it, so I made it my screensaver.
Oh, wow.
So that any time I go to eat, I would be like, oh, look what you've done.
I mean, Fern, that has never been the commentary that I've associated you with. If people were like, can you describe Fern Brady in three words? But it would not be fat, svelte, husky, curvaceous. Even though they're politically correct stuff, it would be none of that shit. Well, I would never say that, but I do. But if you are getting very healthy, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, that's not bad. But to make yourself happy, because you're saying how do you have, like, you know, how do you keep yourself happy?
Dean's probably the worst person to ask, because you said something when we were down in Australia. I was like, it just like stuck with me, and then I was so depressed after.
Oh no, what did I say?
We did this gig in Australia. It was like a big gala show.
Oh yeah, I remember where, yeah. It's in North Sydney, right?
In Sydney, yeah. You play in these like massive theatres.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, and it's...
Ends up on YouTube, right? The clips.
Oh no, that's the Melbourne ones.
Right.
And I was saying to Dane, oh, my boyfriend came over to Australia for 2 weeks, but we just fell out the whole time because I was just... Every day off that I was supposed to have, I had booked a TV programme instead. So, and didn't like hang about with him enough. And Dane was just like, that's what this game is. You got to sacrifice everything.
Yeah, that's it.
I was just like, oh no.
One of the things I was going to say could, you know, bring you happiness is the loved person in your life, you know, that partner.
Yeah, that makes you happy. Having a significant other can make you very happy. But then, you know, they identify there are 7 different types of love and stuff. So,
really?
Yeah, that's what they say. I mean, I can't remember all of them. I think it's just the Eros is obviously between like you and a partner. And then Platos obviously is love of a friend. And there's like familiar ones. And it can also be like love of your livelihood and stuff like that as well, which I think is very healthy to have. Just not have this one definition of love just being romantic, because having love for what you do, these things can provide fulfillment. Because some of the problem in terms of being happy, especially, it's a good question, is that you are arguably in some ways responsible for your own happiness. You can't necessarily control what happens to you in your life, but how you react to it. And that's not me saying that people should get over any kind of historical traumas and stuff, but by that same token, it's definitely, I think, a practice of personal welfare, of trying to find stuff that makes you happy, makes you feel fulfilled, that isn't dependent on anything external. Because in the instances where, like, for example, you can't be with your boyfriend, like, you can still have this self-perpetuating sense of fulfillment, whether it's from the work you're doing, what it's going to lead to, or even just, you know, pursuing, like, a better body aesthetic for yourself, just so that, you know, you have something that can...
It's yours.
It's self-sufficient. And I think also by that token of happiness, it means that by you having this internally... You don't seek it from other people. And also by the same token, if you feel empty, you don't project onto other people. Because obviously hurt people is the saying. So like, when you don't feel good inside, then you're going to start taking out on other people. Whereas if you have this sense of, you can have this self-perpetuating sense of self-happiness and self-care. Then you're not.
I got to get back into meditating, because that's the only thing that fixes it. Because here's a scary question, is if you put all your happiness, if you put all your importance on your work and which I did for ages, main thing of happiness, then what if one day you had an accident or something, you couldn't do it anymore.
Definitely happen. It's happened to
then
some
you have
of
a massive
our,
breakdown.
You know, you have a massive breakdown, because, you know, and I hope I'm not really like trying to sensationalize this, but you know Katerina Vrana. Katerina Vrana is a comedian that I knew from very early on in my career. And she used to run a gig with Barry Ferns called Rudy's Revenge. She's of Greek descent, and she is like the most wonderful, wonderful person. Just one of the nicest people I've ever met. And she had an appendicitis, an appendix burst, and she got sepsis. So her blood became very poisoned, and she became very, very sick. Was in a coma. She's thankfully come out of the coma, but is obviously dealing with a number of health problems which affect her mobility and her ability to look after herself. So you're very right. And in the same way, another person I know is Romina Puma, who, again, was another comic I got with, and she was dealing with a degenerative disease, a muscular disease. And so, it's impaired her mobility. And another close friend of mine, Marlon Davis.
I was going to say Marlon.
So Marlon had an accident where he was in a coma after a car accident. And he's obviously had to spend a lot of his time just regaining his motor functions and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a really important point, because obviously you say, like, I put everything into my work because I love it. And I think you do put everything into work because obviously you realise the sacrifices that took you to this point and you don't want to take them for granted. But it's very important to remember that you do this because you love it. Because I think a lot of time we think, oh, we do because I love it and I want to, but you get to a point where you get into this routine of obligation where you don't want to turn stuff down, because you remember when you didn't have stuff, so you don't turn stuff down. And I think it's obviously very good, because it's a very big part of the professionalism, but always make sure you're doing this because it makes you happy. Because like you said, I gave those examples because, you know, something can happen, which we don't necessarily think about in comedy,
yeah,
where you might not be able to do this when you do have a fucking shit gig, or you're dealing with dickheads all the fucking time. Like, for me, what makes me happy is, like, yeah, I think it's just reflection. Like I said, meditation is important, and just reflection on the fact that, like, I definitely remember 4 years ago, I was so poor, my sister is a single mother paying her own mortgage, and I had to go to her to borrow £20 just to cut my hair. And for me, it's like, I will never forget that, because it's like, I remember I was saying to my friend yesterday, like, I remember, like, the sensation of opening your wallet and knowing what's in that wallet is all you have to your name.
Hmm. Yeah.
And for me, that is insane. So for me, it's like, I'd say the way to do it is just to take, just the small things. Like, even just being able to, like, be in Australia and be able to, like, eat a nice meal.
Oh, Australia was, like, it just felt mad that you could get that from comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I kept thinking, because I didn't go on, because I was, like, skint and stuff, I didn't go on holiday for years and stuff.
Yeah, me either, yeah.
But
yeah.
I wasn't bothered, because I was like, oh, probably if comedy works out, you get to travel anyway.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
And it is better travelling for work.
Yeah.
But the last year, when you were reading out all the things I'd done, I was like, this is like it's happened to someone else, because the last year has been so bad.
It definitely happened to you, Fern, that's for sure.
Exactly. But
it feels like you just get so busy.
Yeah, you get so busy, you get so, and that's the thing. So it's really, the way of remaining happy is just, to take that time of self-care and just to reflect on what you've achieved every now and again. Trust me, you cannot buy happiness, innit? You definitely cannot buy it. And it's like, and like I said, and even your own personal happiness and being able to rationalise all the adversity you deal with, because, like, even someone else in your life can make you very happy. But sometimes people break up, and some people have their own obligations and happiness they have to pursue, which may not include you. And then even worse, what we have to consider is that even if someone does love you unconditionally, just mortality alone, they're not going to be around forever.
I see this all the time.
Exactly.
I'm always like, all love ends.
All love ends. But at the same
time, they could die.
But you know,
they will die.
It will die, but it doesn't die.
Hopefully not that soon.
No, whether not soon as not, because what we're talking about, right, is that when you talk about something like love, this is a power, which we know is able to, like, transcend form and body and stuff. Like, you can conjure someone's image in your head, and the fact that that can have an effect on your body is testament to how powerful love is. So by that token, if we understand that love is an energy exchange between people, laws of physics determine that love as an energy cannot be created or destroyed. So rather than you having this vanity where you're like, I had love, now I've lost it, it's not fair. Having the opportunity as a human being to have this energy and wield it, that's what you should appreciate, which is why people say it's better to have loved than lost. Because just the fact that you get to experience that. If we're talking about love, and everyone has their own individual experiences of it, you cannot experience something which is so rewarding without there being a risk. You can't. Like, everyone knows what it's like to be in love. You remember your first love and how amazing it is. You can't have that without knowing that, you know,
the risk, the
there's
pitfalls.
A risk. There's a risk. And that's why, another reason why, you know, all's fair in love and war, because the pursuit of both is exactly the same.
Yeah.
There are atrocities, innocent people are hurt, like, you know, deplorable acts are committed. There are some wins, but it's an ongoing battle. And essentially, like I said, in a way, we're all losing at a slow rate, because, you know, you're not going to have that love at some point. But by the same token, you know, love is something that transcends age, and it transcends the physical. Like, someone might die, but you can still think about them and still remember how much you love them. So maybe focus on that instead of the stuff you can touch doesn't really matter, because, you know.
So there you go. There's your answer.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Sorry.
No, but it is a fucking serious, that's a seriously good answer. I mean, I think that one of the things that navigates towards to me is that sense of guilt-free pleasure as well. Like, I think that, you know, you kind of love something in your life. Like, it might be, what's your favourite TV show, Fern?
6 Feet Under.
Right, nice, cheerful.
It actually is life affirming.
It really is life affirming.
But
it's an interesting example of, like, I think I watch my wife, who's a busy woman, and we'll watch an episode of something, and I can see that she's thinking in her head, oh God, I should be doing that thing. And actually, if she took the 22 minutes of whatever we're watching, just really took in that 22 minutes and you really enjoy that 22 minutes, I think that is such a valuable commodity. And it applies to what you're saying about the love you share with people. Like, sometimes I'll get the train in with my wife to London, and I'll get off the train first and hold her hand as she gets off the train.
Ah.
And it's just as it's just a little moment. We're both knackered in the morning or whatever. Little moment of just love and just love. We kind of laugh at it because obviously she's not so old that she needs help off the train. But these little moments identify those things.
It's these very little things. It's even like, even sending an emoji to somebody every now and again, or, you know, send them a song that reminds you of them. Like these very small things, like they can have more of an effect. Like even me, like, not to sound like a cliche dick, like in previous relationships, like I've gotten flowers to people and they're like, I've never gotten flowers before, and I'm like, are you fucking serious?
Yeah, so but you've been doing something wrong.
And my dad told me to do that, and I've never seen my dad hold my mother's hand other than on a hospital bed in my life.
Yeah.
And fucking they don't even stay in the same room, so when they're in the house. But then by the same token, like, these are people that have been married for 40 years, so to expect them to be necessarily lovey-dovey is a very big ask, because you know what love they may have is very different to like what I might imagine at which is a much very earlier stage of a relationship. And also, like, you know, and this is going to be a weird way to end it, but it's like, you know, if you're in a relationship for over 40 years, I mean, you fucked every which way you can possibly fuck. Right? So,
yeah, there's got to be more.
Everywhere you fuck, there has to be more other than that act of love.
Well, they're bonded like animals.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah. Exactly.
Because I've been going out with the same person for 6 years.
Yeah, it's been a while for you,
though. Yeah, yeah. And even then, it's like, we have a bond.
Yeah, you have a bond, yeah. You definitely have a bond. That's what I mean. That bond, it transcends physical and even, you know, the sexual congress and stuff. And so, yeah, it's an important thing. And I guess it's why people chase it so much.
So hopefully that's answered your question, Fan. Otherwise, get a pet is my recommendation.
I want a dog so much.
Animals will definitely, that's the simplest answer.
Because someone say, what Fern's saying is that she's got a lot of love to give.
Yeah.
And I think the more you continue to nurture that, let's make it a furnace. And the more you continue to nurture that kind of self-love, it's going to be great for every experience, because you're able to not only project that to people, and then which they will reciprocate, because who's going to turn it back on love? But irrespective of what happens, you're always able to self-sustain.
And put it this way, I never knew how much love I had to give until I met my wife's cat, and the feelings I have for that cat are beyond what I knew.
I mean, I would say healthy, Howard.
But they're getting a bit unhealthy, actually. Yeah, yeah. I'm actually a little bit worried because she smelled a bit this morning, and I thought to myself, oh, you haven't pissed yourself. If she pissed herself, something went wrong with her. But I don't think she has. That's a true story. I like that question. That's just a casual question. Some people come on with very, very complicated ideas.
You know what? But it's arguably one of the more complex ones, because this is what everyone is trying to work the fuck out. How can I be happy? I'd say, the endeavor of all human life is the pursuit of happiness. So it's a very important question.
My question is different. Mm-hmm. It's partly based on Fern being here today. And I'm just going to double check something, Fern. I remember you doing something about you being mistaken for a man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because that was a bit for you. There was a whole show. Did you do an Edinburgh show?
No, the Edinburgh show was about not being invited to the female comedians' brunch.
Right.
But then,
rude.
Did they not?
Just rude.
No.
In Edinburgh.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, that's not good.
But then I done the show. A woman came up to me after the show and she was like, because it was all about how I don't feel like a normal girl, not in a trans way, just not quite right.
Yeah.
And then this woman came up after a show and she was like, your show is just a description of a woman with Asperger's and you should read this book called Asperger Girls. So I did, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I started getting like therapy for it, and I was like, oh, I mean, I wasn't that surprised. I thought I had it before.
Right.
But yeah, that was interesting.
But the whole thing of, you know, it's a really great bit that I remember you doing stuff about being mistaken for trans.
It's tricky to, I would never do it now, because you're just like, people will be like, oh, fucking.
Well, this is my question, you see, because it was really, and Dame will probably remember the bit that I'm talking about from Fern.
I fixed it to be like, because I got mistaken as trans at a gay night in Edinburgh.
It's kind of a compliment, though. Androgyny is a sign of universal beauty.
But this is it. And the thing that I was going to ask as a question is, you know, it's a major talking point. You know, the trans thing. It's a huge controversy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose my question is, why is people being trans such a controversy?
Well, a lot of people, probably my least favourite places to gig, like Newcastle and that, they'd be very married to the idea of fixed gender, you know. There's people that really...
binary gender terms, right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. Can I just say, one of the short answers is that some guys are just afraid that they're going to find someone attractive and reach down and find a dick, and then they'll be like, oh, that means I'm gay. That's one of the reasons.
Potentially is.
Some guys are worried about trans is that they're worried that they're going to find a woman attractive and find out that she has a penis, and then it means that they're gay. That's one of the reasons.
But it's fascinating, isn't it? Because I was looking up statistics before. Look, I did some research, listeners. In this country, 600,000 people identify as trans. It's kind of, I think that's 1%
so
of the pop. That's 1% of the population. That because it's 60 million.
70 million maybe. It's still a small amount.
It's a very small percentage. Yeah. And I thought about just how many. You know, we could go out now. We won't and wander the streets of London and ask people for their opinion, and they'll give such. There'll be definite opinions about it,
sure,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You won't get wishy-washy, like, oh, I don't really mind, mate. You know, you'll get some fucking real opinions. And I just kind of, why? Why does it actually get to people that much? Thing's one thing.
I need to say one thing, is that when you say trans, is that an abbreviation of transgender?
Yes.
Or it's because... Anyway, in this case,
that's what I'm seeing.
Transgender and transsexual.
Yes.
Or are these terms interchangeable? I don't want to make that mistake.
Okay. We will make an amendment point here. Disclaimer that we are talking about the people who identify as I think transsexual.
Yeah. Or transgender, as well as.
Yeah.
Are we including gender fluid? Or.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose we're looking at that area, and I know it's difficult if you're dealing with some of these issues and listening to this to hear people not talk as eloquently in detail about it.
Gender queer is another thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying I'm not using an umbrella term for that, but we're just making it clear to listeners we're not making an umbrella term. But we're just
we are talking around these different.
But you say, why do people are people so opinionated about it?
Well, I just found it like because, like I say, Fern's thing, and it's a good while ago you made that.
Yeah,
like four.
Is that
years
the Pete Burns joke?
No, I didn't have a Pete Burns joke.
Did yes, you did.
I'm I sure did I remember not.
You had a maybe someone made it. For you, I don't know.
I feel like you made it.
You made a Pete joke. I mean, but anyway, the bit of point.
I fucking hope you did.
I didn't. I've never had a Pete Burns joke.
You don't need one either.
Yeah.
So, he died, and we miss it. Yeah. R.I.P. Pete Burns.
But the thing about it is that.
Fern, I love you. You know that, don't you?
Yeah. I'm just sleeping now from the. Fucking exercise. I don't know why people say exercise makes you feel great. It doesn't.
Right. No, not all day.
All day.
But is that would be a piece of material? Like you say, it might have not be as popular right now. Is that the kind of deep feeling?
I wouldn't do it because I'd get in my head about saying I got mistaken for a man, and people would be like, "What's wrong with that?"
And which is Ace Ventura. So the film Ace Ventura mm-hmm. is now really unacceptable.
Or Friends.
Yeah, Friends.
Friends has
very early on, the Ace Ventura thing was considered to be very transphobic.
Yeah.
Well, and was the film called with Dustin Hoffman in?
Oh, I know the one.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Doubtfire is with Robin Williams. He's also
there's
now.
There's one with Dustin Hoffman.
And Dustin Hoffman was in the one. Tootsie. Yeah, Tootsie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but then is Mrs. Doubtfire in. Is that being in drag or is that supposed to be.
I suppose. Oh, yeah, I guess interesting. That's probably not. But I think it plays on certain issues that might be considered.
I don't definitely the thing with Yeah, Ace Ventura came across as very, very transphobic.
Also, in Friends, Chandler cuts off his dad because he transitioned. And that's like, and like loads of trans people, their family do disown them. So I watched it again recently, and Chandler like goes to ask his dad at a drag show if he'll come to his wedding. I was like, oh, this is so tragic.
Yeah,
but I kind of look at it. I would say it's a very different issue to gay rights, but obviously people would there are some links.
Again, even then it becomes very thorny because there is a movement amongst, I guess, the LGBT community.
Well, there's been lesbians have been told they're transphobic because they won't have sex with like a trans woman who has a dick.
Yeah.
And that's fucked.
It is fucked.
But I mean, I'm kind of nervous to say any, like,
anything. Don't be nervous, because I feel like I feel, and I can say that my interactions with people from the trans community is arguably limited. But I feel like if we're not having a discussion, as long as you're not being accusatory or presumptive, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because to exclude, you know, people from the narrative of we're discussing any issue of humanity, I think is a lot more offensive.
Yeah.
Because I do a bit about, like, I did a bit about saying, like, approaching a girl and she's saying, I used to be a man. And, you know, the crowd might laugh, but I do make it clear, then carry out by saying, it's not about transphobia at all. Like, and then use it to get into it, because obviously I'm playing on most people's kind of preconceptions about people from the trans community anyway. So I think it's always good to have the discussion, because you're always, so like, don't be afraid of talking for fun, because if someone wants to correct you, you can be like, okay, I stand corrected, now I've learned.
Yeah.
Because essentially, you know, even a lot of this nomenclature is very new to people now anyway. So we are still learning, and like I said, I think it's important to be open and receptive to learning rather than just being accused or being scared to say anything.
Well, that's one of the things, isn't it? Now it's so socially acceptable to be gay. And it's weird to think that there was a time where, you know, genuinely that was like an abnormality.
Yeah.
And I think it is so controversial because so many people still look at the trans situation as an abnormality.
Yeah.
And the reality there is that what the fuck's it got to do with you anyway?
Exactly. It don't affect your life at fucking all. And then the thing is as well, is that like, I personally feel this shit is linked. So then for me, it's like, we can't fucking be surprised if you've had generations of children who've been victims of sexual abuse. So even when they're even forming their own sexual image, that's already been fucking manipulated and been distorted by their traumatic experiences. So if you've made a young man his whole fucking life being a subject of abuse and made him appear like a woman, then how the fuck are we surprised that now, years later, you've got people that are now expressing that as a part of sexuality? Because sexuality is both a function of nature and nurture. There are some aspects of your sexuality you're born with, and some that's going to be influenced by your environment.
Yep.
By the same token, if you're a kid now, you're a millennial, and you've grown up all these years of 1 year, people are telling you that you should be waxed. The next year, everyone wants you to have a fucking beard. The next year, women are supposed to be curvaceous. The next year, you're supposed to be thin. Yeah. So maybe it's an act of rebellion that you don't want to subscribe to any of these heteronormative ideas or archetypes, because everyone keeps fucking lying to you. So if you don't adhere to that, well, you're less of a person.
Yeah.
So maybe you do want to be like, oh, maybe I'm non-binary then, because I don't want to have a fucking beard and I don't want to have a hairless body and having fucking D-cup tits at the same time. So being whoever the fuck you want. And
it
also
must be a challenge, though. That's the thing.
I mean, but it is weird. If you look at like the kind of people that are on Love Island, where all the men are really hyper-masculine and groomed, and the women
are... But then you're hyper-masculine, but then you're hairless.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, it's like a woman where like you're supposed to be like super feminine, but then you're not supposed to have any fucking hips.
But those extremes where they all look alike, that's strange.
It's very strange,
and it's a big
and it's a big problem, is that it's this way that we've both homogenized our standard of beauty as well as commodified it. So you've made it for so many years that like, if you want to be beautiful, then your eyelashes have to be this long and your skin has to be of this tone. So then how you've been sewing this for so long without any kind of narrative behind it or any context, then there may be... It might be very possible that people's self-image, where their sexuality is concerned, has become distorted, especially because we are so beholden to our images of like high fashion and haute couture, which are always androgynous in themselves anyway. That's why I'm saying that, like,
that word feels like such a key word here, right?
Because it used to be the thing, because a woman can't have fucking E-cup breasts and then have a size 6. It doesn't normally happen. So you can't have one or the other, but this has been an image that's been suggested to us for so very long, then how can we be surprised that now people are beginning to express that in society?
I think androgyny is just a fascinating thing, though, because it what one person doesn't find beautiful, someone else will.
But it's a big part. It's been a big part of human culture. And like I always say, this, like when
you like Grace Jones and David Bowie.
Early.
I was looking at
The Cure. Like
Boy George. Boy George is a really good example.
Prince.
Yeah. That's Prince. Who had a joke about looking like Boy
that
George.
That was it. Sorry. There you go. Sorry. Yeah. But oh my God, that was close. I knew it was somebody from the 80s. Sorry.
But Boy George, I mean, genuinely, because I don't know if you know the story about Culture Club and the fact
I've read his autobiography.
So you know about how break happened because Shaken Stevens was going to be on Top of the Pops and pulled out at the last minute. And they called around to try and find someone to replace him. And they got this band called Culture Club who were really up for it. And they went on and played Do You Really Want to Hurt Me on Top of the Pops, their big break. And within the next couple of years, they were like number one in 16 countries or whatever it is. But what happened that night when Boy George turned up on Top of the Pops instead of Shaking Stevens, the press just had a field day. And it's interesting how, like you say, our agenda for what is... Because I think the beauty element of the trans issue and why it's so controversial comes back to beauty and partly why we... This is beautiful and that's not. And how they define it and how the press set an agenda is part of the issues we're all facing.
One of the strangest things is how people think that trans stuff is new or that it's like a recent thing historically. Because I read a lot of stuff at uni about it and like there used to be loads of cases, not loads, but like significant number of cases where in the American Civil War, was it that? There was some war. They would like get dead soldiers and when they took their uniforms off, it was women that had their breasts bound or there was...
So what Amazon means that? Amazon warriors used to burn off one of their breasts because they were archers. So they'd burn off one breast so they could fit their belt around them with their arrows.
Oh my God.
It's crazy.
And then there was like a couple of cases where this is like in the olden days, I can't specify the era, this woman's husband died. And then when they were doing when they were getting him ready for the funeral, they were like, your husband was a woman. And she was like, no, he wasn't. We've been married for 30 years. We consummated the marriage, but like it was in the dark and stuff. And she swore blind. She had no clue. There's been so many cases.
Oh, so many issues. Like Jerry Springer built a career on this shit, like the reveal. But
God, yeah, Jerry Springer.
But then, remember for a long time, like, you know, the term, which is not used anymore, is an archaic one, but prior to the term intersex, it used to be hermaphrodite.
People born
with like expression of what would be
Jamie Lee Curtis would be the person that comes up there.
Yeah,
and then there's the other. There's also the countess who's like royalty in Jamaica and stuff.
Right,
I only saw her on First Dates recently, and it was very, something very similar. But I mean, I don't know why people care so much, especially when people complain about shit like overpopulation and allocation of resources and stuff. And then you have this, you know, an instance whereby like you know. Some people, maybe this is the way we've kind of evolved to kind of deal with it. But at the same time, I'm not saying like, you know, I'm not referring to transgender as necessarily a mutation. But
No, but it's
culturally, this is the way we're dealing with stuff. And I just think, you know, we are supposed to believe so much in evolution. And the idea is that we have so much focus on, you know, the mind and psychology. Maybe we're transcending the physical. And I also say to people, when you actually think about it, your gender is a very temporary state to be in because prior to puberty, like there's not real big differences between the genders because both male and female gonads will be in your stomach until you go through puberty and your balls drop. Then as time goes on, like obviously women begin to go through the menopause and then you have more of a hypersecretion of testosterone. So women might get facial hair, but by the same token, men will become infertile if they live long enough and then they define it fucking breasts and stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So...
when we get old ladies get more manly.
We'll become gender fluid anyway as time goes on. So this is my point. Really.
Fucking hell, that's very astute.
Well, and you
I
know,
can see it, Fern. People sleep on me, Fern.
But this question, I wanted to ask for one particular reason, which is just that it feels like we're encouraged to skirt around talking about this. Like, for me, this podcast, we represent everyone. We want to represent everyone and people who are going through that thing, and if anyone from that community listens to this should hopefully see allies.
Yeah.
And even if we've said things that aren't perfectly linguistically the right prefix, if everything isn't right, don't you look at us as the enemy in any way.
Yeah.
We are on your side.
There's no malice behind it. But more importantly, what we should say is that what we are trying to arrive at, I would endeavour, is that you're not referred to as a community because you are a part of our community as people as a whole.
Amen.
So, yeah.
So that was my question.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
It's true. I've been thinking about it a lot and I thought about Do you remember Fern? Fern's comedy is brilliant. You guys, whoever's listening to the show.
Fern, I am so happy that I got the thing wrong as Boy George, because in my head I'm like, have I been thinking that Fern?
No,
like,
no.
Pete Burns.
I was trying to think who it was.
God.
Yeah. But anyway, it's time for the last question, which is Dane's question.
Yeah. And again, it's not. I don't think it shouldn't be too difficult. So for listeners who aren't aware of Fern Brady's work, you need to get involved. Because one of the things I like about you, Fern, other than your comedy and intellect, is the fact that you are very candid about your life before you started comedy, which has been, it's been a very colourful life.
That's fair.
That's why I just like sitting in the house now.
Yeah, which is cool, and that's absolutely cool, man. And I think for me, watching
6 feet under.
This is it, exactly.
Oh,
chilling, and smoking, and hitting the gym.
Yeah.
I don't do very much now
because when I was in my early 20s, I was like, oh God, this is like living in a film or something. It's awful.
It's interesting you say that because my question is, what would the Fern Brady biopic be called?
Ooh.
Oh no, I don't know.
Maybe that's what it should be called.
I like that. Yeah. That sounds like you.
Oh no, I need to prepare answers for things like this.
I mean, the biopic, just so it's, because the listeners will be meeting you for the first time, Fern. I mean, the stories that I've heard from you about your ute.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a rough timeline. When I was 16, my parents put me in a mental unit and I did my hires in there, which are like your A-levels. And then I left the mental unit. I had a little skinhead girlfriend called Rita Rooney while I was in there. Left the mental unit, got kicked out of the house, went to live with some loser. Then went to live with like an artist and a drug dealer called Jared that sold all his possessions and became a Buddhist. And then when I broke up with him, I became a stripper for like 2.5 years while I was at uni. And
tough gig.
Yeah, I was terrible at it.
Yeah.
I've never seen a... No, I just...
Stripping so accurate.
I wanted to work on it, man, because I'm aware of Fern's... She's a stripper, and obviously I've experienced strippers, not anymore to a partner I'm with, but I find it fascinating.
Because you said strippers are like comedians.
Yeah, because it's very similar to comedians, because I think I went to a stag do in Bournemouth, and I think one of the strippers I saw at the club... I saw her in a coach station.
Right.
So I'm assuming that she wasn't based in Bournemouth and had gone there to perform the equivalent of a gig.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think there's just a lot of similarities whereby, you know, I think there's very much stigmatized because there's low barriers to entry to get involved in stripping, and also a lot of heckles involved. And, you're really taking a risk of bearing yourself either figuratively or, you know, literally on stage to a bunch of fucking strangers all the time. And people will try and ply you with alcohol. And so there are a lot of parallels.
Yes, but people always would laugh at me in the strip club and then wolf whistle me on stage in comedy. So
that's a real paradox. That's cool.
It was the wrong way around. Really the wrong way around.
I like the idea because, I mean, for me, and I'm not saying for you, but there's some events in your life where you think, one day I've got to tell this story to people.
Yeah.
So
are there like standout parts of that journey where you're like, oh man?
Well, I've done a pilot script of that.
Oh, cool.
So that's all I can write pilots about. They were so no, I moaned and moaned because we both did the same season of pilots.
They're both round of like, oh, comedy feeds, yeah, Rajas.
Yeah, I was like, but see now, I'm like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was so entitled. And I'd never written a script before for my first pilot, and they were so patient with me.
But at the same time, like, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, you know, it's your name attached, so...
They wouldn't let it be set in a mental unit, and see now, it's so zeitgeisty.
There you go, look how much in vogue the idea of mental health
is.
Ahead of your time, so that's why I say stick to your guns.
I think the challenge for any producer, I can't speak for those guys, but... I speak for myself, is to know when to chime in and to know when to not.
Yeah.
That's the biggest challenge. You've got to try and sharpen times.
But when you're doing work under the auspices of a corporation, is that unfortunately you have the need that people need to justify their jobs as well.
Mm.
And where they'll do that is they'll need to imprint on your ideas, because they need to be able to feedback and be like, well, this is why, as opposed to like when you are in an independent kind of situation or independent company.
Yeah, maybe.
Whereby everyone is, I guess, more driven by creativity.
Because
when you think about it, with a corporation, the overheads remain the same, whether or not they contribute. Yeah.
That's interesting. I've only ever worked for the independents, and if I ever worked for the BBC or Channel 4 or anyone, I might change my view. But to me, the greatest challenge is still, can you make a show that people really like and therefore keeps getting made? Yeah, that's kind of the dream of comedy,
but
right?
I think by the same token, you have to always also have that kind of, you know, awareness to be like, well, I don't know this journey, I don't know this story, and this person has had a first-hand account of that. So it's more of a question of, I think someone should be telling you how to do what you want as opposed to what to do.
Mm. Interesting.
They've been really cool this time, though. They were totally like, we know you didn't like the first pilot, and really hands off for a while.
Has it been made? Is it all in the can? Or
find out this month, I think. Well,
fingers crossed.
I'm just nervous it's going to be like, have you seen Showgirls?
Yeah.
Like, quite a point.
Oh, what was her name from Saved by the Bell?
Elizabeth Berkley.
Yeah, so you've been watching that, right?
Oh, I've seen Showgirls so many times.
Right, really?
It's very disappointing.
But I basically wanted
Paul Verhoeven. You know, great director. He was. You're talking Total Recall, RoboCop.
Film was maybe not his best work.
No. But he's a great director in history.
Genius, because it's so bad.
That's his genius. It's like we were all wondering what would happen if you made a porn film with the porn dialogue without.
I've seen it so many times. I had flatworm and parties based around it. But
it's a good one. Elizabeth Berkley, man. I really wanted her career to do so much.
She actually had to go back to uni after that.
Yeah.
Because it ruined her career. And then she was on the American version of Strictly Dancing with the Stars.
Hmm.
And I felt really sorry for her because she was like, oh, you know, dance was so important to me and I loved it. And then I did a film that just ruined that. And she started crying. She was like, I finally found dancing joyful again.
That's sad as well. And then she did Any Given Sunday and they made her play Escort in that as well.
Oh, really, that's a wee shame.
Berkley. Yeah, I was really rooting for her.
But going back to the question, which is, what would your biopic be called?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not good at giving things titles at all.
She's experienced it, which is good. Yeah. Not to focus too much on labels.
Yeah. I wonder what I'd call mine. Moan Alone?
Moan Alone is good.
I'm trying to think of pun-based movie titles. Because I think mine would definitely... Well, I suppose yours would be quite... like a wild story.
Also, I would say Between Two Ferns, by the name is taken.
That would have been good.
Although I feel like you working alongside Zach Galifianakis would be a really good pairing.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw a documentary about an old lady that lived in a laundrette in LA, and Zach Galifianakis took her, he bought her an apartment.
Yeah.
Have you seen, it's mental.
She's supporting him and stuff. I think she allowed him to live with her when he was first starting out or something, or...
Well, I don't know. No, I think he just became friends with her.
Yeah.
And then he felt bad that she was living in a laundrette and her back was sore and stuff. So he bought her an apartment and furniture and everything.
What a nice guy.
Yeah. It's called, I think it's called Queen Mimi.
Yeah. I've definitely heard the story. It's cool. It's like my aunt once back home in Grenada. I think she almost died and a lady saved her from dying. I think she was maybe drowning or something.
Hmm.
So like to this day, whenever she goes there, she like goes and gives this woman money.
Wow.
So that's great. Saved
her life. Yeah, it's cool.
That's really cool. But I think you will definitely, if there is a biopic about your life, it'll be a good one.
Maybe a good one. Yeah, maybe it might have to be a box set film.
Yeah, yeah. A trilogy.
Yeah, it might have to be a little trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. What would you call yours, Dane? Have you thought about it?
No. I used to really like Goodfellas.
Oh, yeah.
And then I kind of read up about Henry Hill.
Mm.
And I'm kind of like, because it says based on a true story, but I'm like, he got through this whole life as a gangster without killing anyone. I find it very hard to believe.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy that.
Because if you think about it, like, you remember that film, like the only times his acts of violence are either his assistant, his friends, in killing another mafiosi, or it's like a guy sexually assaults his wife and he goes and beats him up, which comes across as being very noble. But in fact, you're part of a murderous crime syndicate, which you in turn snitch on.
Yeah.
I hated The Sopranos for that reason.
Really?
Yeah, I really don't like anything about mafia and
that kind of
violence
vilifying it and stuff.
I hate it, like, really hate it.
I think that started happening to me, and I used to love mafia films, and then, I mean, the thing is, the biggest thing for me was in The Godfather when they say you can give the blacks heroin because they're animals anyway, and I was like, yeah, it's not to be revered, really, is it?
No.
No, so, yeah, I kind of, yeah, I mean, I used to enjoy them, and I think I still enjoy them, and I do enjoy my films a lot, and I think the aspect of which I enjoyed was the fact that, you know, these are people that are prosperous, existing outside the fringes of normal society, and
right.
It comes across as quite rebellious and against the status quo, which I definitely empathise with as a black man. Mm. But then, yeah, the fact that these people don't have a lot of respect for me, I'm like, yeah, not really to be idolised, really.
Yeah.
But it was very. I think The Sopranos was very realistic in terms of showing how many drawbacks there are to being a member of organised crime and how it was declining in line with, like, you know, the change in terrorist laws and just changes in the economy anyway. So
yeah. I mean, I know loads of people, like, I stuck with it and watched it all the way through recently because so many people love it, but I just get really down and get angry at Tony all the time. And
yeah,
but
you don't want that stressing your life.
But there you go. By that same token, I think to me that's testament to how well James Gandolfini kind of played that role, because
rest in peace.
He was a lovely man.
He was a lovely man, and as the lead protagonist, like, definitely rest in peace. But, you know, Tony at some points was like, had a lot of sense of leadership, but, you know, essentially was somebody that was not of sound body and mind. As you see in the program, I like it. For it was very realistic, as opposed to showing the glamorous side of organized crime. Yeah.
But we don't know the name of your biopic, Fern, but we'd watch it.
I feel like we interrupted as well because Fern just got to the stripping part, which is, like, you know, only half.
Oh,
the
just film. Basically radicalized me and made me really see how much men and women's interactions are transactional outside strip clubs. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, like, just today, actually, and this fucked me off, Jamila Jamil, who has made a career out of being a conventionally attractive model and TV presenter, is now a feminist, and that's cool. I mean, the stuff she says criticising sponsored Instagram posts and for laxative tea, that's all fair enough. But she was applauding Little Mix because they all posed naked as part of an anti-bullying campaign.
I saw that, yeah.
And they had, like, slag painted on their bodies or whatever. And it was like, no airbrushing, no Photoshop. Yeah, just full hair and makeup and all the fillers you've had.
And I'm very sure that, like, a wax strip has seen their nether regions between that shoot as well.
Yeah, but no nude photo shoot is going to be empowering.
Exactly.
There's no men doing empowering nude photo shoots. And it's just mad how much, because I was tweeting about it and then a woman tweeted and she was like, anytime someone says something's empowering, I always ask, are the people in power doing it or is it just being so bad?
Yeah, but no, I completely agree. Yeah. However you want to paint it, they're still called fucking Little Mix. And we know what the connotations of that are and what their demographic is. And I'm not sure if they'd be that aware of the context of them appearing naked for an anti-bullying campaign. I'm not sure if millionaires who have access to personal trainers and, you know, the best nutrition, standing naked being like, this will show bullies.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm not sure how that kind of helps.
Not sure that's
really
going to fly, right?
Yeah, because, like, you all look like people that would never be bullied. So I'm not sure how that kind of helps. But
there we go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, stuff like that bothers me.
What a good end to the show. Just stuff like that just bothers me.
Mate, I love a good moan.
That could be the name. Stuff like that bothers me. That could be the name of your biopic. Maybe not.
It's a working title.
Yes, we'll get there. We'll keep brainstorming. In fact, we can get.
And also, remember
it is.
I want to finish this point because, like, you're still living your life, and we're still on the journey. So we don't even have to start putting together a draft yet. Because I get pissed off personally when I see, like, reality star autobiographies.
Mm.
It's reality, innit? So we're seeing what they're doing anyway. So why do they need to make a fucking book?
Yeah.
If you're like, oh, I'm a reality star, that means we're getting an insight into your life on a daily anyway. So why have you written a book?
Mm.
Also, where is the conflict here? So I'm famous for no reason, which is fine. We're past the point. So where is the conflict in this book? So then the producer came and told me I'd have to just be myself.
Oh my God. I found out Charlotte Crosby's a millionaire and I felt there's, like, a long way to go in comedy.
There is a long way to go in comedy. There are a lot of these guys are millionaires, but this is what I'm trying to say to you. It's like, but then what are we going to talk about in terms of her ascension into becoming so successful? Because it's like, it's not like, you know, this time came when I had to like use this part of my talent to get through this. Hmm. You're just doing nothing. But then this is the point, is that maybe to some people, the easier that journey looks, the more immediate the aspiration is. Because if you see somebody become a millionaire from not really doing anything, for the laity and the plebs, as we've said, that is a lot more appealing than knowing.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, with the Kardashians, it's like, I just feel one of the issues is that they get paid to be girly girls.
Yeah.
And if you, and the idea of you suggesting to a girl that's growing up under this patriarchal system, you can become a millionaire by just wearing makeup. No one's going to say no to that.
No, of course.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
Thanks for coming on the show, Fern.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Fern. And it's congratulations. And I hope it has cheered you up. Cheered us all up with your presence. Just need us to say, where can people continue to be happy and enjoy more Fern Brady? What's coming up?
I'm alive at the Apollos on January the 3rd.
Ah, nice.
And there's that dumb BBC Scotland thing as well.
Oh, good promo for Fern's new show.
And then I'm on tour next year.
What's the name of your tour?
Power and Chaos.
There you go.
That's a great name.
That's a great name for a fucking autobiography too.
There you go.
I thought you said like that.
Go and watch Fern. She's funny.
Go watch Fern. Check out Fern's stuff as well. And Fern is available on all your good socials as well. And yeah, make a note on your planner to check out Live at the Apollo on, you say, the 3rd or...
The 3rd of January.
On the 3rd of January. So you have time.
And if this podcast has come out after the 3rd of January, then go back in time and look at it on the iPad.
Yes.
Cool. In the meantime, thank you so much for coming, Fern.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him at danebaptweets.
Our guest was Fern Brady. You can follow Fern on Twitter at Fern Brady.
The show was produced by me, Howard Cohen. You can follow me at The Howard Cohen. The show was mixed and music was by Faye Sackey. Thanks to Polly and Gelly. Thanks for listening. And remember, question everything.